Do you cycle to work? This week, listener JC shares some tips on cycling. Plus, can you grow more fat cells? And how much is too much information when it comes to your body? Coming up on episode 30 of Fat to Fit Radio.
Welcome to Fat to Fit Radio, your source for real weight loss solutions without the hype. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Ainsley and Russ Turley.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to show number 30. How is it going this week, Jeff?
I'm a little sick this week, but right before the show, you just alluded that you had another big weight loss this week. So let's hear what it is.
Yeah, last week I pulled off the over 2 pounds off the body, and this week also not quite as much, but 2.1 pounds lost. I was weighing in at 268 pounds this morning.
So last week you lost 2.4, and now with 2.1, that's 4.5 pounds in 2 weeks. That is really awesome. So if I did some quick math here, in about, 2.5 years, you could get down to your birth weight.
That's a goal. That's a goal. I don't know if it's a good one, but it is a goal. Yeah, you know, I just went out to dinner with the family, and I got a chicken sandwich. I actually tasted all the like ingredients. There was no goopy mayonnaise like covering up all these flavors. And man, it's amazing how good food can taste when you don't cover it up with all that fat and stuff. So that's been a big reason why I've lost over two pounds this week, because I'm just not eating all that extra fat stuff that's just I've clogged my body with for so long.
No, that is just awesome that you're down 4.5. Now you've got this great momentum going. I mean, you said you're going away in July for this cruise, so, you know, you'll be that shirtless guy.
Adonis is the word, Adonis. And we'll put pictures on the blog. We get some before and after. Hit that goal weight and for the cruise, and I'll put up some before and after. It won't be necessarily all the way after, but that goal picture. So that should be fun. But anyway, Jeff, so you're sick, but what else is going on in Calgary this week?
Well, there's some positives and negatives about living in a place that has a lot of snow. And the positives, I have 2 dogs and a small backyard, and I don't really have to pick up dog poop all winter because it's frozen and the snow goes over it and you can't see it, so it doesn't really matter. But unfortunately, once all the snow was gone, like last week, you have 6 months from 2 dogs pooping in your backyard. So it took me about 2 hours and several garbage bags picking it up. So it wasn't the most thrilling weekend I had. And then I got sick after that. I'm not sure if they're related, but boy, I don't want to pick up that much dog poo ever again for the rest of my life. So I'm assuming that you must be having a better time there in California than I was.
I don't know if I can beat Pooper Scooper extraordinaire. That's just amazing amount. And you don't have small dogs either. You've got some big dogs.
Yes, they're not the biggest dogs they can be, but you wouldn't know from looking in my backyard.
Well, you know, this weekend, we've just been getting ready. My wife, Lori, is having an abdominoplasty surgery on the 21st of May. And so we're trying to get everything in the house kind of in a real easy, just maintenance mode. So when I'm home for a week and then we have people coming in to help her out while she's recuperating from that, that everything is just really easy for everyone to find everything. Everything is, the kids can go out and play in the backyard without having a bunch of, you know, sticks and things from the yard that have come down during the winter, and we haven't really kept up with yard maintenance. So it was just a whole weekend of cleaning up and getting ready for that.
So this surgery, is it a result more of the twins?
Yeah, you know, she was, she's a very short torsoed woman, very long legs, very short torso. It's almost the exact opposite of me. I have this huge long torso. So when she's pregnant, it just, everything just goes straight out. And let's see, my first son, Adam, he was almost 9 pounds, 8'15". Then we had twins. One of them was 7 pounds. And the other one was 7.5 pounds, 14.5 pounds of baby in there, plus all the other birth things. And then our fourth was 8 pounds, 13 ounces. And by then, her stomach muscles, there's a thing called a rectus muscle. It holds the two halves of your abdominal muscles together. And this thing has moved apart and does through all pregnancies for women. But hers, after 3 pregnancies and really some really big kids, does not go back. So they're going to go in and fix that, and at the same time do a little little tummy tuck work.
Isn't there that show on TLC, that John and Kate Plus 8, where she had that surgery?
Yeah, it's going to be a very similar surgery. I believe she had the same kind of damage. And, you know, a lot of women, you know, maybe don't get the surgery right away, but hers is, she's very uncomfortable, and it's really not, you know, we can do it right now, so maybe not be the best time with the kids and their ages, but we want to get her back into a comfortable place.
Well, I hope that everything goes well, you know, on behalf of myself and most of our listeners.
Well, thank you very much. And, well, enough about us. Let's get into our email and comments for this week.
All right. Our first email comes from Christine, and she wrote an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Yep. Christine wrote, "Hi, guys. Terrific job on the shows. Love the weekly weight loss updates because they represent that true loss is a journey. Thank you for having the courage to share that part of your life. Although I have never had significant weight issues, I have always battled 15 to 20 pounds of extra weight. However, since I am just under 5 feet tall, 5 pounds on me is a pant size. I've managed to lose quite a bit over the past 8 months, and I'm having success with the maintenance because, as boring and cliche as this reads, I've made some basic lifestyle changes. Reaching for an apple instead of a brownie, committing to eating more salads, less bread, and taking more walks. Although I did reach my goal weight, I've decided I still need to lose a few more pounds because, being in my early 40s, I have lost some muscle mass over the years, and this weight is no longer my fighting weight. Your April 28th episode addresses the issue of muscle loss so well. Strength training is such a critical piece of the overall weight loss, healthy lifestyle process. Although my friends and family kid around about my man arms, I am not giving up this essential piece of the process. Thanks for addressing its importance. I will keep tuning in as long as you keep doing the shows."
All right. Now, what she's referring to wasn't an actual podcast. It was an article that I wrote on fattofitradio.com. Myself and Russ, we try and write an article at least once a week in between the shows so people have other things to read on the website as well. Now, this post was entitled, "Why You Get Fatter As You Get Older." And here's just some facts. After age 30, every single decade, you lose about 6 pounds of muscle. Now, what this means is that your body will burn less and less calories naturally as you get older. You see, a pound of muscle burns between 30 to 50 calories per day doing absolutely nothing. So if you lose 5 pounds of muscle, maybe that's 150, 200 calories less per day that you can eat to maintain your weight. So I give an example of a man who's 5'10", you know, kind of average height, 180 pounds, average weight, and he can eat about 2,500 calories a day. And let's say his entire life, he eats 2,500 calories, and this is good food, lots of fruits and vegetables and whole grains. He's eating perfect. By the time he's 60, he might gain 60 pounds of fat by eating the exact same food throughout his life. You see, at age 30, he has lots of muscle, but as he naturally loses some of this muscle mass and he continues to eat the same amount of food, he has a lot of extra calories going into his body on a daily basis, and he will gradually gain weight. So the person who eats like a 25-year-old at age 50 will probably be 50 pounds heavier. Now, this is just kind of the short version of it. To get more details, take a look at fattofitradio.com. But this is a reality of life. As you get older, you're naturally going to lose some muscle. And of course, you can do something about this. You can do weight training throughout life, not necessarily to become a big bodybuilder, but by doing weight training, you can maintain the muscle that you have. Thereby, you get to eat just as much food as you always did and not gain weight. You see, as you get older, gaining weight gets easier and easier because that's just a portion of aging, and that's the portion of losing muscle. But it doesn't have to happen to you. So what do we have for our next email, Russ?
Yeah, item number 2 is from Robert, and he commented on last week's show about interval training.
And he wrote, "Doctors Ed Fox and Don Matthews of The Ohio State University developed this interval technique during the middle 1970s as a result of funding from the U.S. Air Force. Coach Woody Hayes switched to this technique after talks with both of the researchers. I was in my middle 40s at the time and could only do 25 push-ups in 1 minute. After switching to this new interval training technique, within 1 month, I could do 100 push-ups in 1 minute. And I must say, that's very impressive. I broke the exercise into 15-second intervals and then rested for 1 minute, but only exercised a total of 60 seconds per day. How about that? I am now 78 years old and still follow that interval technique. This is, in my opinion, the best way to exercise.
Now, I was just incredibly impressed by that as well. 100 push-ups in a minute. Now, he said there he staggered them, though, and rested in between. So that's how he was able to do that. But I had never heard about somebody doing it that many of the push-ups in a minute.
And it just goes to show that this interval training technique, it really has a lot of benefits. You're going maximum intensity, which causes your body to have a maximum training response so that you're improving, but you're not doing it too long so that you're not getting injured or overuse. So Russ, did you try any interval training this week?
Well, I'm still working up on the Couch to 5K program, so I'm not doing a lot of high intensity stuff right now. I'm just still getting back up to that. I don't want to get injured again. That's my goal here, is to get to a point where I can run that 5K and not get injured. But you know, as soon as I get to that point, I'm even hearing this now, it really, really motivates me to get to that point where that's going to be a great way to exercise.
Well, I tried it once this week and I was doing an elliptical trainer, and generally I work up to, for me, level 16, and I'll maintain this for about 31, 32 minutes. And that burns 600 calories for me. I did a 3 minute warm up and then I did 20 minutes, so a total of 23, and I got 670 calories done. And that was going up to the maximum level that the stair climber could do for that 1 minute. And that was, I tell you, the most intense workout I've had in a long time, because generally I don't push myself that hard. I go on the elliptical machine and generally my heart rate's around 152 to 155, and I can kind of go forever. This one here, my heart rate, it was, you know, right up at 175, 180 for the short burst there, and then I'd bring it down to 110, and I was sweating for, it seemed like, an hour after that workout. It was quite a shock for me because I wasn't used to it, but for sure, I'm going to try doing a workout like that at least once a week.
That's impressive. That's like a whole nother meal you burned off there, 670 calories. That was a big meal.
Well, there is quite a difference between level 16 and level 20 on an elliptical machine. It was almost double the resistance, it seemed like. It was about the most I could do, I tell you, just for that 1 minute. If you heard the last show when Russ is yelling, "Oh God, please let me die," when we're doing the highest interval, that's what it was like for me. But I was determined to push my way through. And it was a quicker workout and more calories.
I'm pining for my crumpets. Okay, but you know, that's going to do it for our comments. And if you have a comment or suggestion, there are four ways you can get a hold of us. The first way is to leave a comment on the blog, just like Robert did, over at fattofitradio.com.
And you can send us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com.
Third way is by leaving a voicemail. There's a button on the front of the page over at the website. Just click on that and you can leave us a free voicemail.
And of course, you can join our support group at fattofitsupport.com.
All right, now we're going to tackle some news items on the web report. Jeff, you have the first one.
The item that I found this week comes from thetelegraph.co.uk, and it is entitled, "The Reason Fat People Find It Hard to Lose Weight Is Found." Now, it's a little bit of a misleading title, but that's what you want in newspapers. You want people to read what you've written. But anyways, here is the summary, and it's pretty interesting. They did a study of people who had been radiated in the 50s and 60s from nuclear bomb testing. Now, what they wanted to find out is all about fat cells, and if you really have the same fat cells your entire life. And the best way to do that is find people who are radioactive in their fat cells, and they take a look at the fat cells over time. And here's what they learned. They found that the amount of fat cells in your body is determined in childhood. I've heard this over the years, and people kind of said they weren't sure if it was true or not. Well, I guess it is true. The number of fat cells is set in childhood. And they also found when you lose weight, you still have the same number of fat cells. They are just smaller, so they're just empty of fat. Now, the third thing that they discovered is that the radioactive fat cells showed that about 10% of your fat cells die every single year. But your body replaces them with new ones to keep the same number of fat cells constant. So the number of fat cells is set in childhood, but they're always dying and being rebuilt. So it always stays the same. Now, at the end of the article, they summarize that now by knowing this, it will provide a new place to attack obesity. So now they can try to attack the formation of new fat cells when others die. Now, I kind of disagree with how they summarize the results of this, because in reality, people who have fewer fat cells can become just as obese as someone who has more fat cells. You can still fill up those fat cells to have the same amount of fat. It's just one person might have more fat inside each cell if they naturally had fewer fat cells. So I think in reality, even if you stop the dead fat cells from regrowing and you end up with less fat cells, I don't think it's really going to make an impact on people's general obesity, because that fat will just go into the other fat cells and fill them up more. But I do think in the long run, if you're eating a reasonable amount of calories, no matter how many fat cells you truly have, if you overeat, they're going to fill up with fat no matter how many you have. But it was interesting to find out that your fat cells are constantly turning over, you know, just your regular life.
All right, but I've got an article this week here. It's very interesting because, you know, we've talked about these fat scales. They measure your body fat and percentage of water and as well as give you your weight. And Jeff's talked about these different scales where you can put it on a particular body part or hold it in your hand. And it will also give you, say, the percentage of body fat in your upper body and then of your lower body, and average those out and give you a really much more accurate assessment of your body makeup. But this one is this new scale. It's called the Overall Health Balance Scale from National Electronic. And this is a Japanese company. And actually, most of this article is in Japanese, so I don't know what everything says here. But it is a new type of scale that will measure your weight, your BMI, your subcutaneous fat ratio, your organ fat level, your muscle level, and this is the one that I find hard to believe, your basic metabolic rate. And you got to check out the article, because the pictures are, they show this woman, she's holding up to her leg, up to her arm, up to her abdomen, and as well as standing on it and holding this device, and it's getting all these readings. And you know, this would be a great, again, that weapon in your arsenal. You get a really accurate picture of how your body is made up, what percentage of fat and where it is, and really just kind of more information is better, you know, and I think in any case. So really interesting.
I think that's awesome, because as you're losing weight, if the numbers are not going down, but you can actually see your fat percentages on different parts of your body changing, that's really motivating to keep going. And even on the other way, if you're gaining weight slowly and you're denying it and your clothes are fitting tighter and tighter, you can actually see where you're gaining the weight. I think this is just a great tool. It might be a little anal for some people, but boy, if you're really interested in this and want to know exactly about your progress, I think it'd be a great idea. We just got to wait for them to hit the stores here in North America.
And now we're going to move on to this week's feature section, and we're going to be talking about cycling to work.
Now, this topic is almost entirely brought to you by one of our listeners, and his name is JC, and he's from Dublin, Ireland, and we first heard about JC back in show number 18, where he sent us an email that we read on our show, and in that email, he was talking about how he agreed wholeheartedly with the premise and attitude of our advice, you know, dealing with the lifestyle change, etc., with weight loss. And he mentioned that he had recently changed his lifestyle and was now riding his bike to work, which was about 15 miles or 25 kilometers, and it would take him between an hour and 2 hours one way. And he really considered himself still overweight and out of shape, but he believed that if he could do it, anyone could. Now, kind of to make a long story short, back then he offered to send us a cycling guide that he wrote himself so we could share it with our listeners. And he wrote this guide based on all of his trial and error, and it has lots of good advice and hopefully will help out anyone who is thinking about commuting to work on their bike. Now that it's springtime everywhere, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, we thought that it'd be a good time to do this topic. And what we're really going to do is go through his guide that he wrote specifically for us to read to you guys. So thanks again, JC.
Yeah, just to let everyone know what we're going to do here, it's going to be broken up into six parts: safety, tires, gears, routes, maintenance, and clothing and gear. And we're mainly referring to cycling to work here, but of course all this information will also apply if you're just cycling for fitness. But keep in mind, the advice here is fairly basic, and it's designed to save the average person who's just getting started in cycling, to keep them from getting some headaches. So the first topic is safety, and this is not the section to skimp to save money on. Buy the best you can, because the aim is to protect you and to make you more visible on the road.
And he says that a good bike helmet is an absolute must. There's no room for compromises here, and make sure that you get one that fits your head properly. He recommends going into a decent bike shop and asking them to get help to find one that fits you properly.
All right, also here, to get a decent set of front and rear lights for your bike. A yellow reflector jacket with the light stripes can be strapped on any backpack that you may have also.
And he personally recommends a good set of padded fingerless gloves. As well as making it more comfortable to cycle, if you ever have to come off your bike at speed, you want these on to protect your hands. And of course, your helmet will protect you. One other thing I'm just going to add in here, a mirror. A mirror, you can get a little one that fits on your handlebars, or even one that fits on your helmet. You know, you just kind of look and it's right by your eye level, you can see it. This really keeps you from swerving into traffic when you're looking behind you.
And remember this one thing: if you are involved in an accident, who is more likely to come off worse, you or a car? Be safe, know the rules of the road and the local cycle lanes and rules. You do not have an automatic right-of-way just because you are on a bike and are a road user like everyone else, so obey the rules.
And the second section is about tires, and slick tires are your friends. And he writes that his normal journey takes about an hour and 40 minutes to an hour and 50 minutes to get to work. He's not in shape at all, so he imagines that most people could do it quicker. However, that doesn't matter. Someone told him to switch his tires because, like most people, when he bought a bike, he went with a new shiny mountain bike. And he says, let's face it, that's what a lot of people do when they buy a bike. They buy the biggest, baddest looking bike they can get without really thinking about what they'll be using it for. They have nice, big, and wide, grippy tires, which are great for off-road and rough terrain. However, in and out of the city, it isn't exactly rough terrain.
Yep, here he says he saved 20 to 30 minutes on his first attempt cycling in, and it made the hills much easier to take. The only reason he actually bought the slicks was because he had a tear in the other types of tires that were causing blowouts. Otherwise, he probably wouldn't have bothered and continued taking nearly 2 hours to cycle in.
So to sum up, wide tires are good for grip and uneven terrain, but they take more required to drive them. The thinner the tire, they're suited for paved roads and they require a lot less effort to get moving. And the basic point is that all tires are not one size fits all.
All right, and JC has an important safety tip here. If you're like him and you switched over from the nice wide tires to thinner ones, bear in mind that you lose some safe margin for maneuverability. You now have less road surface to cycle on, so turning quickly and quick moves leave you less margin for error.
Now, JC is from Dublin, so he put in a translation for us so we'd understand that last sentence, and it is, and I quote, "Be more careful turning and such, or you'll go splat."
That's nice. And also here, now you might be thinking, why don't I simply go with a racer-style bike over a mountain bike? To be honest, he just prefers the frames on the mountain bikes, and when he gets the time and likes to go off-road a bit, he can simply switch tires.
And here's another thing that I'm just going to add in. If you have a mountain bike with shock absorbers on the rear of the bike, they'll actually absorb every time that you pedal, so it will take more and more energy while you're pedaling. So a stiff frame bike will always be a little bit faster.
Our third topic here is learn how to use your gears properly. And he wrote here, I realize this sounds like something that is cycling 101, but it amazed me how much I had this wrong. I had a friend who knew what they were talking about trail me and watched me shift my gears. Here's what I was doing wrong. There should be little resistance when cycling. The pedal should be spinning pretty freely. The temptation is to always try and power over a hill. Try dropping a gear just before you hit it and get the extra spin and go up gently. Also, I recommend reading around, and we're going to put a link in the show notes that talks to about how to use your gears properly. So check that out at fattofitradio.com.
And I agree with everything that JC wrote here. And I'm just going to add a few more things. When I was in university to become a phys ed teacher, I actually took an outdoor ed course where we learned the technical aspects of cycling and mountain biking. So I'll just add in a little bit here. The term that he's referring to, which refers to how fast your legs are pedaling, is called cadence. And most people who just ride casually to the grocery store might average at 60 revolutions per minute while pedaling. And the recommendation is generally to keep your pedaling at around 80 RPMs. So no matter how fast or slow you're going, they say to keep your legs going, and it's going to seem a little bit fast. Now, this will keep you automatically setting your gears properly. So for most people, when they hit a hill, what they do is their pedaling slows down and they start standing on their pedals and trying to use their body weight to keep pushing it. What you should be doing is changing your gears so you continue to pedal at the same speed. Now, your bike will slow down, but you'll continue to be doing the exact same amount of effort, and that's really the key to using your gears. It's kind of like a car. If your car is bogging down because the gears are too slow, you've got no power. As long as you keep your legs going at that same speed and keep adjusting the gears, it's always going to seem like you're at the same effort. And really, you're going to be just as tired going up a hill or going on a flat plane if you're pedaling at the same effort.
The next topic is number 4, check your route. Remember, you are on a pedal-powered bike, which means if you go 2 or 3 miles or more longer than you have to, the extra time and energy is coming directly from you, not the gas pump.
And he suggests using maps to plan out your trip in advance. I would suggest driving a couple of routes to work to find out the best way in advance as well.
Right. Now, here in Long Beach, we have there are bike paths and bike lanes in a lot of roads, but there are actually streets that don't have them. Also, there are dedicated bike paths along many of these routes that parallel the streets. Also, there are if you're going for a long distance, and there are lots of river trails that you can take, will actually cut an amazing amount of distance off your ride if they happen to go near where you're traveling.
Another thing about finding a safe route to work, you really want to look for roads that have a wide shoulder or less traffic. And it is possible in some cities, like in Calgary, for example, there are a lot of roads where it is just too dangerous to ride to work. And sometimes there's only really major freeways that go in certain directions. So you don't really have a choice. So you might have to get creative if you want to ride to work. You may not be able to ride the entire way to work. What I notice here in Calgary are a lot of people actually will ride their bike to a subway station and then take the rest of the way in on the train because it might get a little bit too dangerous to make it all the way in. So there's always a way. Don't think you have to make it the entire way to have a lifestyle change and get some exercise on the way to work and on the way home.
Right. And one other thing that JC points out here is to be familiar with the time of sunrise and sunset so you know when it's safe to cycle. In major cities with good roads and plenty of space, this isn't much of a concern. But if you're like him and you live somewhere where the roads for a good 5 kilometers are back roads with no extra room, you need to know when it's going to be light and dark.
All right. The next main section is maintenance. And he writes that he got slapped by his mate for using 3-in-1 oil on his chain, and rightly so. He took a cloth and showed me how much gunk was on my chain and gears because of it. Then he gave him some spray oil, and it actually helped clean off the other stuff as well. Less gunk on your chain means less resistance, which means an easier cycle. Anything with Teflon in the oil is what you're looking for.
Also, hand pumps are nice, but the only way to do it properly is a proper foot stand pump. They have a proper gauge so you can pump it up to the PSI it should have. You can find out what it should be on the side of the tire itself. If you intend to cycle a lot, it's a must-buy. Most hand pumps simply won't be able to do it properly, and simply checking if the tire is hard can be very deceptive. The amount of effort required on a poorly pumped tire is noticeably different from a properly inflated one.
And you should properly give your bike a once over with regard to cleaning the chain, tires, and checking your brakes at least once a week and at any other time you feel the need to. And it's common where I live, people bring their bikes in to a local sporting goods store at the springtime and they go through an entire tune-up and make sure everything's working as well.
All right, the next topic is clothing. Now, this can depend on how far you're cycling. You can't get away with a 25-kilometer cycle and expect to be able to wear a business suit the whole way in. This is all geographical and weather dependent. Normally, he has a set of combats, which I've never heard that term before, tracksuit bottoms, and a t-shirt. If it's cold, I will have a rain jacket on as well as a set of waterproof trousers in my pack that I can put on quickly if need be.
And he suggests to get a lock or storage facility in your office if possible. And this will make your life so much easier. You can leave a change of clothes, towels in there ahead of time, so you don't need to worry about bringing them in with you.
Another suggestion is to buy a small, sturdy backpack. And we'll put a link into an example backpack in the show notes. And it's good to get one that has supported shoulder straps and a pull-out rain shield and a lot of space inside.
On the show, we talk about having a weight loss toolkit of all your strategies and things to do, but you should also have a good kit inside this backpack for any sort of emergency that comes up when you're cycling. And here's what he suggests to have inside the backpack along with any clothing and towels. And that's a hand pump, an inner tube, tire levers. Now they get the tire off of the wheel if you got to change the inner tube, an adjustable wrench, spare batteries for lights, maps. And he puts in brackets, although he finds out that he uses them for lost tourists more than anything else, a water bottle, and some extra waterproof clothing.
So that's a document that JC sent us, and there's a lot of work in that document. We really appreciate it. A lot of good information. And I'll say, Jeff, now, I don't know if you have cycled in the past. I have, and particularly for training for a triathlons and the like. So what kind of tips can you give the listeners?
Well, I guess the big one for me is make sure you have a comfortable seat. These racing seats, oh, I just never get used to them. I need some padding. How about you?
Well, you know, JC mentioned the tires, and that was one thing that I have a kind of a mountain-style bike myself. It doesn't have any kind of suspension on it, but the first thing I did when I decided I'm going to ride this thing on the road, I got these tires called City Slickers, and they're specifically made for mountain bikes. And they're kind of maybe a little bit wider than the normal kind of a road bike, but they're that slick and they have a great tread on them. It's still meaty, but it's nice and smooth. And so that was one big thing that really helped in my riding. And also, like I said, the backpack, instead of a backpack, I have this little pack. You know, I'm riding wide enough. It goes right in my frame and it attaches to the top and the down tube. And it holds an amazing amount of stuff in there. And what I always put in there, I think it's still in there. It's probably been in my bike pack for about 10 years. I think it was about $20 in small bills and change, because if you have to buy something when you're out on the road and you forget your wallet, put a little piece of paper with an ID in there, some money, and some sunblock. Boy, you know, you do not want to be sunburned. If you're out for 2 hours riding on your bike, you want to get that in there. So there's a couple things to keep in your little pack.
One other thing, I have this little mini computer. You see, there's a little magnet that you put by the forks and one on the spokes of the tire, and it measures your speed, and it'll keep track of your average speed and your time above a certain speed. And it's just really kind of a geeky thing that gives me a challenge while I'm biking, because I like to keep my average speed above 30 kilometers an hour, for example. Just something like that might make it a little bit easier and more challenging if you're just riding by yourself.
Now, here in Southern California, I can pretty much bike all year long. If it might rain a little bit here, but we don't have any weather that's going to stop me from going out any day of the year. But up in Calgary, you're battling some snow quite a few months of the year. Is it a good idea to bike in the snow?
Well, you won't see anyone riding their bikes on the roads at all. Like, you won't see the 10 speeds, with the thin tires or anything like that on the roads. But I do know in university, there were still some hardcore people who'd be riding their bikes. And what they get are the thick mountain bike tires with the really knobby tires. And they generally get these really like quarter inch screws, the small screws, and they'll actually screw the screws into the treads of the tires to get more grip. It's kind of like the hardcore runners that will actually get really grippy running shoes and screw screws in the bottom just so that you're not slipping as much. But it depends on the temperature, of course. You know, if it's 30 degrees below zero Celsius, you know, you've got to worry about your face freezing and frostbite. But generally, as soon as the snow is gone, the first weekend, it's just a huge explosion of people riding everywhere. We only get maybe 4 or 5 months where it's, you know, nice cycling season. So everyone takes advantage of it here.
So the topic of JC's paper here was cycling to work. So I know that if I was cycling to work, which is about 5 miles from my house, I would be a sweaty mess when I got there. Now, I don't have any kind of shower or gym facility at the office to change and just to get dry and clean. So I'd pretty much have to be sweaty, and I don't know that I'd be too smell too good at the end of the day. Do you have any suggestions, Jeff, for what somebody in that position might want to do?
Well, I think this would be the perfect opportunity for our listeners who do this to give us some suggestions by leaving us some comments on the blog or sending us an email to podcast@fattofitradio.com. Personally, the last time that I was riding my bike to work, I was teaching just phys ed, and I had a phys ed office, and I had my own personal shower. But I'm sure that's one in a million people will have that opportunity. So I'd be curious to see how other people are getting around with that. I know some people are lucky, they can just bring a towel and dry off, and they don't really need to worry about a body odor problem or anything like that as long as they've showered first thing in the morning. But I think for other people, there might be some more challenges, and hopefully they've come up with some unique solutions of how to get around that. So hopefully some people will leave us some feedback and send us some emails, and we can report back in a week or two. So Russ, what do you have for us this week for a recipe?
Well, I was sitting down with a nice glass of Chardonnay and reading a book, and I thought, you know, what's going to go well with this drink? And what immediately came to mind was some kind of really crisp, clean, some kind of citrus salad, maybe with some tuna steak on the side or a piece of chicken. And so I thought, I'm going to find a recipe for a salad. And I found a great one here at allrecipes.com, and has lime, mandarin orange, navel oranges, grapefruits, shallots, and really nice dressing here with made with olive oil, and then over romaine lettuce. So I think this paired with a really nice rare tuna steak would just make a wonderful meal. So check it out. It's a citrus salad, and you'll find the link at the show notes. All right, so Jeff, what kind of homework do we have this week?
The homework this week is just to try cycling outside. I know that many people probably haven't ridden a bike since they were a child, but give it a shot. If you don't currently own a bike, you can usually find a place to rent them by the hour. And if you haven't ridden in years, go where the tourists go. That way you can find a place that rents bikes, and you could check out the sights in your own town or city. So the bottom line is, everyone can find a bike hopefully this week and go for a bike ride. You know, spring is in the air, it's awesome outside, and maybe you just might find that you really enjoy it again.
And what's our motivational quote this week?
My quote this week comes from a 5-time Tour de France winner, and no, it's not Lance Armstrong, it's Miguel Indurain. And the quote is, "There's something more important than winning. Dignity must come before everything, including victory in a race as important as the tour. You can't treat people without respect."
All right. Thank you, Jeff. And I want to thank everyone out there for listening and for downloading the show. Be sure to check out the website over at fattofitradio.com. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Send your feedback or questions to podcast@fattofitradio.com. For more information on today's show or any previous shows, visit the website at fattofitradio.com. If you would like to support the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast directory.